Start introducing it while our secret agent works on infiltrating the high security headquarters of Machal. We'll introduce a little bit what we're talking about today. It starts off with a medrash, and it's a medrash that we all know from the time we were little girls. Aside from me, it was never a little girl, and it's about the letter Aleph and the letter Beis. Okay, going back to the world of Aleph Beis. It's a medrash that tells us. In fact, I will read the original, because I have the original, even if you don't. With the letter Aleph, it says like this, in Bereishis Rabba, Aleph Yud. Amar Abelazar Berchanina B'Shem Rabbi Acha. Abelazar, am I starting too early? A little bit, people need some time to get in. Come on in, folks, welcome. Rabbi Elazar Berchanina said the name of Rabbi Acha. Esrim v'shisha doros hoysa ha'aleph karetagor lifne kiso shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. For 26 generations, the letter Aleph was protesting before the throne of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, 26 generations, those are the 26 generations of from when the world was created till Torah was given. Right, there are 26 kilolam chastos in Hodul Hashem Kitov corresponding to that. And the letter Aleph set up a protest tent. Anybody see any of the protest tents here in Israel? There's some like outside the Prime Minister's residence, outside the Knesset. Yeah. For different things, people will go out there in tents and kind of hang out and protest. So the letter Aleph, for 26 generations, was protesting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the letter Aleph said, right, what was its deal? Said, Amar Afonu Ribono Shel Olam, Ani Rishon Shel Osios. I am the first of all the letters. And why didn't you create your world with me? Right? The letter Aleph is bummed out. Everybody buys their fancy leather-bound chumash. You open it up, you got a nicely calligraphed Beis right in the beginning. That seems so unfair. He got demoted for no fault of his own. Right? The letter Aleph isn't there. The world was created with that Beis. In fact, right? It has this lashon of with. Bereishis. With the Reishis, because of Reishis, the Beis is a very powerful letter. So what's Hashem's answer? Oh, I figured out how to play with this last thing. Should I do it? Is that it?
Yeah.
Oh, it glows red when it's on. Look at that. So, if we could turn off the lights. Anyways. So the answer which HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave to the letter Beis was, he said, what did he say? What is it? He said, Amar Lei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Ha'olam u'melo'o lo nivra elo b'zchus ha'Torah. The whole world was created only in the merit of the Torah. Shenemar Hashem b'chochma yasar oretz. Hashem created the world with chochma. Chochma is Torah. L'machar, tomorrow, this was the day before Matan Torah. And he boldly think Torah, I'm going to come and give the Torah. I'm not going to start the Torah that I give only with you, letter Aleph. Shenema Anochi Hashem Elokech. Okay, so that's a medrash. So some people look at that medrash and they think, you know, what a childish Jewish folktale that these people were telling around their campfires. Right? And we have heard this perhaps in a childish kind of way. The letter Aleph complained and the Beis was there. But we have to try and make some sense out of what it's telling us. Especially because it's hard to see the answer to what happened. In the end, the Beis is still the fancy letter there in the beginning of the Chumash. Anochi Hashem Elokecha still comes in there in Parshas Yisro. And the letter Aleph said, hey, you know, you didn't create the world with me. It says, even better, I created the world for Torah and Torah starts with you. So we have to understand what this Medrash is telling us. Right, it's important, maybe we'll do a class on approach to Agadotas in general. Ramchal writes that these things are written in ways so that people who are not the right kind of people will look at this and say, you know, nah, this is not for me, it's just foolish Jewish folktales. And only the people with the keys will be able to enter and see the wisdom that's in there. So here's what the Svasemis tells us in this sheet. It didn't come?
Yeah, there
was
just some papers stuck in the machine.
Ah, that's me. Okay, story of my life. Stuck in the machine. I'll call my biography that or something. Okay, so I'll read you slowly the Svasemis. and explain it a little bit, and then we're going to elaborate on it outside the book. The meaning of this medrash says this: Vasemes lirmos ki atara shebosachas ba'alef kodemes lamaisa bereshis. K'mo she'omru chazal atara kodmo la'olam. What it's telling us is that Torah really comes before bereshis. Now, coming before, we say, wait a second, but Torah was only given after you had the world. So you say you have to go back before that. The Torah existed before the world, meaning the world was created for Torah, and not vice versa. This concept is a very big chiddush. I lose my power. Right? It's a very big shift from my Yetzirah to pace and my Yetzirah to boom through the microphone can click. So this idea of the way in which we balance the world and Torah is laid out here in very clear terms. The world is created for something. Rabbi Yochanan Lubavitch of Mir says that's one of the first things we gain from Bereshis. A person who comes and learns Bereshis knows this world is not hefker. It's not something that just happened. There's a plan to it. It was created for something. It was created according to plan, with a beginning, with an end point, with a goal. And all of that is in the Torah. And a Jew's outlook at the world has to be that. What it means to say is this Medrash tells you the world is always secondary. The world is a base. There's always something before this world. And we must look at this and understand it in order to approach the world in the proper way. Let's take a look at another formulation of this that's done by the Arachayim. The Arachayim says in the beginning of Parshas Bamidbar that Hashem spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu, Bamidbar Sinai, Ba'ohel Moed, Be'echor, Ba'chodesh Hasheni, Ba'shona Hashenis. Okay, this is the first pasuk in Parshas Bamidbar. So the Arachayim HaKadosh comes and he asks, he says, wait a second. There should be a certain parallelism between time and place. Right? We know, we find this in many Svarim. There's the famous thing what's called Oshon, you'll see. Olam Shana Nefesh. The world meaning the geography, Shana meaning time, Nefesh meaning people. Olam Shana Nefesh. And there are certain parallelisms, like Yerushalayim is parallel to Shabbos in many ways. Right, when you have Jewish people in Yerushalayim on Shabbos, that's like the triple crown. Right, that's all those things come into sync. That's part of the specialness that you feel in Yerushalayim on Shabbos. So here he says there's a non-symmetry. When you're talking about the date, it goes from specific to more general, day, month, year. When you're talking about the place, it says Bamidbar Sinai, the general. And then Ohel Moed, the more specific. To the Arachayim, this jumped out from the pasuk. He says, this doesn't make sense. This is out of balance. This doesn't compute. And he has a very fascinating answer. His answer is, you know what? It is parallel. This one also goes from specific to general. So we look at him and we say, Rabbi Ben Attar, maybe you're a primitive guy from Morocco, but we could show you satellite photos of Midbar Sinai. It's very big. Oh, Moed, we know how big it was. It gives us the measurements in the Torah. It was kind of small. So Midbar Sinai is the big general location. Oh, Moed is a specific location in there. How do you come by and tell us that Midbar Sinai is specific and Ohel Moed is general? So the Rechaim comes back at us and he says, because you're forgetting what's inside Ohel Moed. Inside Ohel Moed is the Torah. And the Torah isn't in the world. The world is in the Torah. It's one of these things you'd stay up there at night. Right? In my kind of childish little mind, this, what helped me understand this was slide projectors. Probably nobody uses them anymore. In school, they still bring out sometime a slide projector. You put in these little squares and they click it and it goes from picture to picture. No, they all use computers now and stuff. It used to be this thing. Anyways, you have laptops with projectors, right? That little laptop there could project a big picture on the screen if we had the capability. So you take a primitive person and you show them a big picture. Let's say I wanted to show you pictures of my vacation in Disney World. Okay, so there's me and Mickey in the Magic Kingdom. Very large picture if we had a big screen. You can pull down a big screen. And this primitive person comes in, he says, where's that from? So you say,
That picture is from this little box. He says, can't be. Doesn't fit. Right? You can't get it in there. The answer is it's a projection. This came first. And everything else that you see is a projection of that. The world is a projection from the Torah. That's what the Aruch Chaim is saying. It is. It's gone from the specific. Midbar Sinai is something which exists, which comes out of that code, which is there in the Torah.
If you look at a computer game, you have, you know, your little people running around the screen shooting each other. But those are only projections of lines of code that make up the program of that. Everything that happens on your screen is really simply coming out from those lines that are there.
In some ways, maybe we'll talk about how Avraham Avinu found the Torah. A really good computer nerd can look at your game and start reciting the lines of program that make that game happen. Okay? That's a way of looking at it in the reverse way. Another formulation of the same principle. Haggadah Shel Pesach,
the Beis Halevi's explanation of the question of the Rasha. The Rasha asks, Ma Avodah Zos Lachem? Says, isn't this getting kind of ridiculous? Okay, it's nice that during a certain freedom episode, a couple thousand years ago, somebody's bread didn't rise. For this reason, we got to go crazy, waging chemical warfare on our houses and giving ourselves stomach aches, eating these crackers every year? Give it a break. Ma Avodah Zos Lachem? So the answer which is given to him is, Ba'avur Zeh, Asa Hashem li betzesi mi mitzayim. Says you tell the Russian, Mr. Russia, you got the order of the world wrong. You think that an historical event happened called Yetzias Mitzrayim. And then the Torah commemorated that event by creating a mitzvah of matzah and an isser of chametz. That's wrong. It happened the other way. Yetzias Mitzrayim happened to bring the mitzvah of matzah and the isser of chametz into the world. Those things existed before the world. Those historical events came to bring those things into this world. This is a very important topsy-turvy that we're doing in terms of how we view the world and how we view the Torah. And it really parallels itself in the way in which we live our lives, in our lifestyle. Is there the world? And Torah is an aspect of our life in this world. The religious portion of our lives. Right? The Torah portion of our lives. Or is everything Torah, and the world is simply an aspect of the Torah? Yes, ma'am.
You just said that we eat matzah. Yetzias Mitzrayim happens that we would have the mitzvah of eating matzah. So why is it called Eidos?
So why is it
called Eidos, like the mitzvah?
Ma Eidos v'chukim ha'mishpatim. Yeah, because mitzvahs are made on what happened, for sure. That's part of what they do.
So it sounds like it's saying that it's based on what happened and not the other way around.
Again, Yetzias Mitzrayim also happened because it's an aspect of Torah that had to happen in the world. Right? All those things, everything, basically all of history is Torah which is happening. They say the Vilna Gaon said that if a person knew how to do it, so you could see all the events of the world in Parshas Bereishis. I think he said even in the description of the 7 days of creation. A person knew the Sodas HaTorah, everything is there. Right? Everything is there. You're there, I'm there, my microphone is there. All these things are there in the Torah, and they all came out into play in this way. Okay, again, the more rationalistic folks here may be experiencing cerebral pain right now, but think about it, right, and try it on, and it's good to think about at night when you're lying there looking at the ceiling. Okay, so this is what we have. And now we're going to try to see how this affects lifestyle. How this affects lifestyle very much in a few different ways. The Sfasemis continues, okay, and I'm just going to read one more small paragraph from the Sfasemis and explain. Kamoche. In this way, tzorich ha'odom lahakdim ha'torah b'chol yom kodem kol pu'ula ba'olam hazeh. A person has to preface every action in this world with Torah. But he doesn't really just mean preface. Okay, when he says lahakdim, so there's an idea of chronological precedence, but there's also an idea of value precedence. Now it's true, there have been debates many times in schools, especially in America, it's come up. Sometimes what happens if it's more convenient to have what they call secular studies, English studies, before the Limudei Kodesh? In general, you can find that Gedolei Yisrael were very against putting something else in the morning. They pushed that schools at all costs should have Limudei Kodesh in the morning. For many years I taught down the street here in Machon Lev. That was one of the things that Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky told them at the founding of the school. That it has to be, that it must be that the Limud HaKodesh comes in the morning. Right? So, again, it's not just the idea that you're fresher in the morning. Different people work different ways. Till the caffeine hits my system, takes till around 11, 12 o'clock often. And then I start to wake up a little bit. So, the idea is making a statement that the chronological precedence is expressing something in terms of the value precedence. What is created for what? Whom was created for whom? The world of physics and mathematics and computers and all these things were created for the Torah and not vice versa. That precedence is part of it, but that's not what the Sfasemis means. The Sfasemis means something much more. The Kotzke Rebbe, I don't care, Hasidus, the Sfasemis represented, came from Kotz, once mentioned something very, very strict you would want from his Hasid. And it's an amazing demand, and it's not something we should demand of ourselves. And don't try this at home, and don't call up your mother's after shir to say that somebody told you to do this. Okay, he says that he would want from his chassidim that he should be able to stop them at any point in the day and say, tell me why you're doing what you're doing. And they'll be able to give him a reason for it, and it'll be a Torah reason. No matter what they do, 24/7, he can come. Tell me why you're eating. Tell me why you're walking down the street. Tell me why, tell me. And they will have a Torah reason behind what they're doing. That's a very, very high level of demand. But, even at our level, there are ways in which we can apply that. And this is what the Sfasemis says we should do. It says, Be'emes zeh atzmo sha'odom nosin hareshi se'lat Torah b'zeh mekayim ha'olom. He says, we are Tzelem Elokim. Why do we read Bereshis? Are we going to be creating a universe? Is it a how-to book? In certain ways, we create our own world. Every Jew is an Olam Mole. We are creators. Asher Bara Elokim Lasos. And we must model our creation, the doing that we do in our life, on HaKadosh Baruch Hu's creation. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I'm defining Olam Hazeh as Beis. That's what that Beis in Bereshis does. It's secondary. There's something which is before it. That means causality. There's a reason for me to create this world of Beis. What's that reason? The world of Aleph. The world of Anochi. It says, you two in your world, everything you're doing, when you're working in the world of Beis, make there an Aleph before it. There should be an Aleph before it. And he darshans this from a very beautiful Chazal. Look at the way he does it. We're familiar that it says, Bereshis, Bishvil HaTorah, Shenikres, Reshis. He says, Chazal darshan, the world was created for Reshis. The world was created for the Torah, which is called Reshis. Why didn't they just say B'Torah or Bishvil HaTorah? Because he says the world wasn't created for Torah. That sounds shocking. The world wasn't created for Torah. He said the world was created for making Torah Reshis. The world was created Davka for Torah, which comes before everything you do in this world. If you do Torah in this world, but it's you make the Torah the base, you flip your Aleph from the base. Olam Hazeh becomes the Aleph, and the Torah becomes the base. That's not what the world was created for. Even though you're learning tons of Torah, even though you're doing lots of mitzvahs, that's not where it is. Precedence is key to us. It's not just the doing of it. It's the position that you give Torah. Bishvil Reshis, for those people, Am Yisrael, who will make the Torah Reshis, before everything you do. This is what he says. Because we give the Reshis to the Torah, we give the precedence to the Torah, we recognize that the Torah is that which comes first and everything else must be a result of Torah, that's how we are Mekayim the world. Okay, so let's look at the way this applies itself in our life. There's a whole world of stuff that we do that is hard to define. We know that there's a world of mitzvahs, and we know that there's a world of averis. But there are lots of things that aren't necessarily a mitzvah listed in the Taryag, and that aren't an avera listed in Taryag. Like buying shoes. Okay? I want to go out and buy shoes. Is there a mitzvah in Sefer Achinuch, thou shalt buy shoes? No. Is there a thou shalt not buy shoes? No. Also not.
Right? Again.
You can come up with little cases. You can't wear, buy shoes. Well, you could buy shoes of shatnez. Couldn't wear them. Right?
So, what do you do? So, these things are classified by Chazal often as what's called Divrei Rishus. Divrei Rishus.
This encompasses all the things that aren't a mitzvah and aren't an avera. And if we look at our lives, it encompasses a huge percentage of those things we're doing in our life. Many, many, many of our waking hours, especially once you get out of the school system and things like this, are spent doing Divrei Rishus. Now, the word Rishus is a very tricky word. And this Rav Hutner pointed out, and I heard elaborated on by his Talmud Rav Aaron Schechter, says like this, Rishus we tend to translate as permission. Right? That's if somebody has their Hebrew class and you say, Hamora yeshli rishus laleches lasherutim, or something like that, right? You ask for permission. Do I have permission to do something? Applied to this idea of our actions, it would seem to say, there are things that Torah wants me to do, those are called mitzvahs. There are things that Torah doesn't want me to do that are called averas. All the rest of the stuff, Torah says, go for it. Couldn't care less. You have permission to do what you want. This is a big mistake. And you can see it in the Lashon. Let's look at another application of the word Rishus. In Hilchos Shabbos, we have Rishus HaYochid and Rishus HaRabim. And your classical translation for that will be domain. Domain, private domain or public domain. That area which I rule over, that area which I control. Even the Hebrew word for a net, reshet, implies control. A net controls that which is within it, whether it's flopping fish or your hair, right? Something which is inside a net gets controlled by it. That's the idea of a reshet. Divrei Rishus are those things that you control. Divrei Rishus are those things which you control. And Rav Hutner went on to say that in Avodas Hashem there's no Switzerland. There's no Parav. This is brought down to the Chovas Halvavos also. Something is either going to be something which adds to Kavod Shemayim in the world, which increases those things which Am Yisrael is supposed to be doing, or detracts, one way or another. So wait a second, are you telling me everything is a mitzvah and everything is an avera? No. The Divrei Rishus are different from a mitzvah and avera. A mitzvah, the results are immediate. In a mitzvah, if I go, I put a coin in the tzedakah box, boom, I've done a mitzvah. I brought Kavod Shemayim into the world, I fulfilled Ritzon Hashem. I go out and I eat a ham sandwich. Bang, I've done an Avera. I've been Mechalel Hashem. I've gone against Ritzon Hashem. I've damaged the world in that way. In Divrei Rishus, there's no immediate result. I go out and buy shoes. Okay? Let's see how it plays. What's the point of my buying the shoes? I could be buying my shoes with Kavod Shabbos. I could be buying my shoes so my feet don't hurt when I'm giving a shiur standing up. I could be giving my shoes so I can run for Dvar Mitzvah. Or I could be buying my shoes because I know these are the best shoes in the world and I'll make everyone else in the shul feel bad they don't have shoes like mine. There are different ways in which a person can do these things. This is where you are the guide and retroactively will be able to see if you guided this toward Kavod Shemayim or not. This is what's called Divrei Rishus. That's that world of so many of the things we do in this world. And what's demanded of us in the very beginning of them, the Svasemis says, is taught to us by this medrash about the Aleph and the Beis. You must have an Aleph before the Beis of your Divrei Rishus. Do in this world, buy shoes, play tennis, work on your suntan, do all the different things that are there, but only if there's an Aleph before them. Okay, now, I don't want people to get OCD about this, because then people start thinking, oh my gosh, I want to get an iced coffee. But is that iced coffee, does that have an aleph before it? What's the aleph before my iced coffee, which is a beis? Let me see, I'll probably doze off in shir if I don't have the iced coffee. So there's Torah behind my iced coffee, I'm going to buy it. Okay, is that for us to get to that specific? Right, it's more in terms of general. What it means is, do I define my life as the life of Torah? And therefore, everything I approach in this world is there with that behind it. And it's an extra dimension which really is there to a Torah Jew if we pay attention to it and we give it the Aleph and we give it that precedence. Person is going to work. Once a guy said something very sad to me. He says, yeah, I got to get a job that makes me more money. I said, why do you want to change your life? He says, hey, I got to eat. Okay, so person's going to work because of gotta eat. So why do you gotta eat? What's behind it all? Isn't behind it there the idea that you need to live as a Torah Jew? That you need to support your family, to build the bias of Torah that requires money? Aren't there those things that are there? A person takes care of themselves. They go to their aerobics class, right? They read some poetry. They listen to something on their iPod. Why are you doing it? I don't know, I like it. But shouldn't there be something more behind that? Isn't it, well, I'm maintaining, I'm taking care of the body, which is the kli that the neshama uses to do its things in the world, right, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave me? Isn't it that I'm relaxing my mind so that I'll be able to be a better wife, mother, Oved, Ovedes Hashem? Isn't it that each of these things that are there, don't get into it where you're thinking about it afterwards, let me think of a reason why I did that. Think about it beforehand. Think about it beforehand. And that has many, many effects in the way in which we do something. Because if you start off with the Torah, then if you're coming to do something, so then it'll be virtually impossible to do it in a non-Torah way. Right? Let's say a person says, you know what, I'm a happier, better, more invigorated Oved Hashem when I do aerobics, I exercise, I work out with some weights, I keep in good shape and I feel good. Good. But now, where can you do it? Well, the best deal is in, you know, the whatever super buff mixed gym down the street. Oops. But wait a second. How can I go to that gym if that gym isn't halachic and the whole reason I say I'm doing this is for the Torah? It just doesn't compute. Right? It can't be. So therefore, if the Torah is the precedence, if somehow all these things we're doing are an expression of our life of Torah, so that already puts us into the mold that those things that we're going to do are in sync with Torah. If I'm going and I'm working in a business, so sometimes people make this certain division in their mind. They say, okay, business is business, religion is religion. Leave the shul out of my office, I'll leave my office out of the shul. And then you start to pull some fast ones when you're in the office. But if you say, why am I in my office? For Torah. As an expression of Torah for all these things. So how can you break Chosh and Mishpat while you're doing those things? Doesn't make sense. So this is an aspect of the control, and it's a demand, it's true. And it may bop out different things that a person wants to do, and that can seem to us kind of tight. I mean, wait a second, I can't just do, like the Nike commercial, just do it. I have to have these kind of Torah reasons before it. But let's think about what it gives you. What it gives you is that none of those actions are simply isolated. None of those actions are simply doing something because it feels good. But there's an eternity now to all of those actions. There's a meaning to all of those actions. There's not that emptiness afterwards that came because when you simply stimulated a pleasure center and then it's gone. But it had a purpose behind it. And in doing so, you helped fulfill that purpose, and that purpose is eternal. It's a whole different way of life. It's a way of life which has content and which colors and adds the eternity of Torah to every single thing that you do. Okay? There's a famous story that many of you might have heard if you read the biography of Rav Shlomo Shadron. I think they translated it into English. And it's a powerful story in terms of applying this. Right? Rav Shlomo Shadron was walking the streets of Yerushalayim. I don't think I told you this story. Throw something at me if I did. And or grab a little dose if you heard it already and let other people. So Rav Shlomo Shadron used to live in Shari Chesed. People know Rav Shlomo is the famous Yerushalmi Magid, right? If you don't, run out and buy his biography. So he was a famous character here in Yerushalayim, and he lived in Shari Chesed. Now his mother lived in Beis Yisrael, right? That neighborhood which is being slowly taken over by the Mir Yeshiva, building by building. So one day he was out walking in the streets of Yerushalayim, taking a couple of kids by the hand, towards his mother's house in Beis Yisrael. While he's walking in the streets, he meets a great Baal Musar. Rav Isaac Sher, his name was. Rav Isaac Sher was the son-in-law of the Alter of Slobodka. So he meets Rav Isaac, who was an older man in the street. And Rav Isaac asks him, he says, Rav Shalom, what are you doing? He says, Rav Isaac, he said, some of my kids are sick, so I'm taking the healthy ones to my mother's house so they don't catch it. He said to Rav Shalom, what are you doing? He's hard of hearing, old guy. I'm taking the healthy kids to my mother's house. Some of my kids are sick. I said, Rav Shlomo, what are you doing? Dr. Slobodka, they didn't get the biology. Right? He said, sick children at home. Germs. Germs. He goes, healthy children far away from sick children, from germs. Right? He said, Rav Shlomo, what are you doing? He said, I know what you want from me. He said, listen to what I'm telling you, and listen to what you're telling me. I'm asking what you're doing, you're telling me I'm taking care of my kids so they don't get sick. Everybody does that. Animals do that. Little cats, little kittens, right? Dogs, puppies, little baby duck-billed platypuses, the mommy takes care of them. That's what happens in the world, right? All these things happen all the time, every place. He says, but is that all that you're doing? He says, who are those little runny-nosed people you're holding by your hand? That's the next generation of Torah and mitzvahs in the world. And they're in danger. And you're protecting them. That's what you're doing. He said, if you understood that beforehand, it adds so much more significance to the action that you're doing. It adds so much more significance to what you're doing, while you're doing it, and when you're doing it. And there are so many ways in which a person can apply this, which are true. There's a famous statement, I was told this by one of these van drivers, I don't know if you've seen in the Frum neighborhoods, there's these van drivers who take the kids to school, and they all seem to be getting into the Guinness Book of World Records how many kids you can cram into a minivan. Right? They just keep taking them out like the magician pulling rabbits out of the hat. Right? There's always more coming up. So this one van driver told me, a famous thing that was said by Rabbi Tzion Abba Shaul, who was one of the great Chachamim of Yerushalayim, one of the Shashivas of Parat Yosef. He said that a van driver like that, the kavana he has to have when he slides open the door of his van, is like he got psicha and he's opening the Aron Kodesh in Shul. And each kid you take out, you should feel like taking out a Sefer Torah. That was what he said. And if you think about it, it's real. That really is true. What is the Torah if not for the next generation that are there? So therefore, the significance which is added, if a person really has that Aleph of Torah in their head beforehand, it adds it in and it makes everything we do in our lives an entirely different quality. Rabbi Isaac Sher, actually, I saw in another book years later, a similar story, where he kept pounding in that lesson a different way. He found the Slobodki Yeshiva in Bnei Brak. So one of the Talmidim came over to him, he said, Rebbe, I get a mazel tov. He said, no. He said, I'm a chosen. I got engaged. He said, why? Right? And the guy's like, hey, everybody gets engaged. Right? Bad answer. Right? He says, didn't you think about what you're planning to do with this whole thing? Weren't you thinking about what you want to do, what it means to build a bias, what it means to get married, what it means to take care of a wife, what it means to have children? Think about it beforehand. And then it means so much more in all these different ways. Right? Let's imagine, right? Sometimes I have these really weird imaginings. Right? At one point we'll have a whole shiur about imagination. Imagination is very important. Right? Let's imagine that you're walking around Yerushalayim. Right? It's a cold, rainy day like today. Kind of dark. And you're walking in Mein Sharim, and you do the smart thing of getting off the main drag, going into some of the little narrow alleyways behind it. And suddenly you're walking down one of the narrow alleyways, and there's a creak of an old metal door. And an old guy comes out kind of bent over, and he's kind of got a cataract over one eye. And he points at you, right at your stomach. And he says, your first child will be the next Gadol HaDor. And you say to your friend, did you hear what he said? She says, what, who said? That old guy. I didn't see any old guy. I think, oh my gosh, that must be like Elio Anavi. Right? And he told me that my first kid is going to be the next Gadol HaDor. Okay, sorry, this puts life in an entirely different perspective. No. Right, suddenly you start paying more attention in class because you've got to prepare yourself because you're going to be the mother of the Gadol HaDor. Right, then you start getting a bit fussier about who you're going to be going out with because this is going to be the father who's got to bring forth this Gadol HaDor. Right, and there it is, you get married after a little while, you wake up in the morning, you throw up, he's here. There he is. Right? So right away, right, everything is different. Right? You start going through the house, right? Certain CDs and tapes go out the window, right? You start listening to these things, all you do is you sit at home and you read old Olamenus and BY Times or something, right, to make sure that the Gadol HaDor is brought up in an environment of total kedusha. And there it is, you know, you're saying Tillum all day, and finally you go, he's born, right? Oh my gosh, and then in the middle of the night, he cries, the Gadol HaDor needs his diaper changed. Maybe I'm coming, you know, and all this kind of things, right? We're giving him his cereal and all this stuff, because this is the next Rav Yoshi, this is the next, who knows, Uber, Vad Yosef, right? All these things, right? And the person will be, so the whole point of this weird fantasy is, right, is a regular Jewish kid really that much less? Is a regular Jewish kid really that much less to be excited about and to be concerned about? And that diaper that you're diapering is that the next Jewish kid, a kid of the next generation, will be there. And that cereal that you're cooking up for him, and all the different things you do, schlepping him to the doctor and for his shots, and arguing with his principal why he shouldn't throw him out of school, and all the different things that you do, right, you're doing that, for every Jewish kid is important. If we realize the power of Torah, and we have that Aleph which is there, before the Beis that we do, so then that would add that content to everything that we do. It is especially important in the world of women, right, because sometimes they're less involved in the world of shul and the day-to-day davening and shiurim and things that are out there. And a lot of times you're doing things in the world of bays. One girl once complained to me, she said, you know, after I left school, I feel like I'm a long-sleeved guy. Because what's the difference between me? I work in an office with an Italian girl. I get up, comes to the office at 9. She gets up, comes to the office at 9. Right? I work most of the day. She works most of the day. It's true. What I eat for lunch is different from what she eats. Eats her lunch. I mumble to my apple before I eat it. She doesn't. Right? There are different things that are there, right, between us. But otherwise, most of the stuff I'm doing, I don't feel it. Right? Sometimes there's even a result of something called post-seminary syndrome, right? Where you blame your husband for this. Right? It comes up. Person who became a high-flying seminary student, sitting here, you're up in the library late at night, steiging away with the sfarim, right, doing all these things, and suddenly, because you married him, and suddenly you got pregnant, and suddenly you got a house to take care of, and kids and all these things. No more ruchnis, no more Torah, no more anything like that. He took me away from it, right? So eventually in the middle of the night, you get filled with, you know, beat him over the head with a pillow, having it destroyed your ruchnis like this. But again, this is part of the idea that in Torah, because the Aleph comes before the world of Beis, so that world of Beis is full of this. It's full, it's imbued with Torah. Everything you do is imbued with that eternity of Torah. And what's there? The same goes for a man who would, during the different shifts in his life, he may be in yeshiva one time, he may be able to learn more another time. There are times when he can and there are times when he can't. But if there's an aleph before in each of these things, so that adds that power to all the different things that he's doing. So this is a very big key that a person has to be looking for in what we're doing in life. The aleph before the beis. This is what's meant by the primacy of Torah. Look, a lot of people face this. You see in Pirkei Avos, it talks about the idea of Asei Teras HaKva U'Melachtecha Arayim. The Torah should be the main thing in your life. The Melacha is something secondary. And I know so many people who say, how in the world am I supposed to do that? The Rambam writes, when he writes about a recommended Seder Ayom, he talks about working 3-4 hours a day. I know a Jew from Yemen who told me in the marketplace in Yemen they used to work like half a day. They would be jewelers. They would work making beautiful gold and silver work and things like this. The rest of the day they spent learning and davening. But nowadays, go find a job where you can earn a living legally in 3-4 hours. Right? It's like, you can't do that. So a person's there working 8, 9, 10 hours a day in his job. He says, how am I supposed to have the Torah be the kva, that which is kavod? It's true, I try to keep my learning in the morning, I try to keep my morning in the night. But to tell me these things are secondary, it's not talking about amounts, it's not quantitative. Qualitative. It's what's the aleph in your life and what's the beis. What's there for Torah and what is the Torah there for? If a person realizes that all these things that they're doing are there for Torah, so then the Torah is kavua. It's always there. It's always behind it. It's always behind everything that we do. This is what a person should be thinking, seeing, sensing. So a beautiful thought from Soloveitchik. He was talking about the idea in a siyum. When we talk about Hadra Naloch v'Hadra Chalon, Lotis Nashim Inoch, Lotis Nashim Inon, the idea of not forgetting the Torah, of constantly returning to the Torah. So he says, what does that mean? Is it simply the idea of remembering your lessons in Torah, remembering the content? Obviously there's something there about that, but he said he feels it's talking about something else. There's an idea of memory which is even beyond conscious memory, and he compares it to the thought that a mother has for a child. A mother throughout her day can be doing many different things. But constantly behind her, if you could go deep into her consciousness, she's always thinking, what's happening with my kids? What's happening with my kids? What are my kids doing now? What's happening with them? How are they doing? How are they doing? She doesn't verbalize it. She's not even aware of it. She's working hard at the thing she's working on at that moment. But that's constantly there. That is an echo of the person who puts the Aleph of Torah. We're constantly supposed to be thinking, what's happening with Torah? What's happening with my Torah? What's happening with our Torah? What's happening with the Torah of Am Yisrael? That's the topic which concerns me more than anything in life. And everything else that happens here is happening within that, is happening as a part of that. I think when people talk about the shifts that people make when they come to Eretz Yisrael, this shift is one of the biggest ones that's made. If a person is able to step back, because this is your chance to kind of step out of the world of assumptions, the world which is so noisy and calls to us, there's something which Chazal called Kol Hamona Shel Romi, the noise of the multitudes of Rome, which Rashi says the whole noise of Olam Hazeh, the whole noise of what success is in Olam Hazeh, what failure is in Olam Hazeh, what's important, what isn't important, and for a person to step back and say, wait a second, before all these things that are happening here, there's an Aleph. And that Aleph is that which is Anochi Hashem Elokecha, which is the Torah that the world was given for. And that's what makes the difference in everything that I do. If you can look at that, if you can see it and sense it, then you're able to do a lot. But don't make the mistake of limiting yourself too much. The Torah is very broad, and there are many, many different bases that can come after that Aleph. As I mentioned, taking care of your health, taking care of your emotional well-being, taking care of your community, your family, all of these different things all come within the world of Torah. Even a person who has to veg out for a bit. I heard a very interesting etzah in terms of this. The Kotzker perhaps wouldn't be happy with us when sometimes he comes to somebody and says, why are you doing that? When a person, let's say, I don't know, just fiddling around with their cell phone or something. I don't know. I just didn't feel like doing anything. Right? That concept of not doing anything, it's kind of frightening. It's always said that it's a very non-Jewish concept to talk about killing time. Kill time? Time is so precious. A moment, right? If you have a moment, that moment is here, and it's never going to come back again. How can you kill it? But nonetheless, there does seem to be a need in our generation that a person doesn't want to have programmed leisure time. Okay? I don't want to exercise. I don't want to read a book, I don't want to write poetry, I don't want it. I just want to veg out. I just want to do something stupid. Alright, that's what I want to do. So, a very great Rebbe in this generation gave the following etzah. He says, fine, do it, but with the following criteria. Decide how long you're going to do it for. Say, fine, I want to veg out on the couch, decide I'll do it for 20 minutes. I want to chase the little snake around my cell phone, decide you're going to do it for 10 minutes. Right? But stick to it. Stick to it. It's true, you can't, and then that element of control means I'm deciding to do this as part of my life of Torah. I need this. For whatever reason I need this, I need this. It's not just something I happen to fall into. And that's a very important way of looking at life. David HaMelech says in Tehillim, he says, O'ira Shachar, I wake up the morning. I awaken the morning. Right? It doesn't just mean I wake up early, but I saw the Slonim Rebbe brought this down. I wake up the morning. What does that mean? He says, because most of us, the way we fall into a day is very passive. Right? In other words, what's going to happen with you tomorrow? I have no idea. It depends what the day will be like. And the morning comes, the alarm clock rings, and then we're kind of like a ball on a pinball machine, getting whacked around by different things in life and bouncing off of different things one way or another. David HaMelech says, I'm David HaMelech. I'm an Eved Hashem. Wake up world, it's time for me to do my thing inside of you. I'm coming actively, not passively. I understand that the world is a playing field for me to make Torah decisions into. And I come to decide what to do, to make those decisions. That's what life is about. I'm not subservient to you. The world is my tool. If I'm a person of Torah, so the world wakes up for me. It's not me waking up for the world. It's a very powerful decision in terms of making a person more active as opposed to more passive. So much in the world relies on the fact that we're passive people. That we don't have conscious reasons for the things that we do. But things pull our strings one way or another. The whole world of advertising is based on this. If there's an ad for Sprite showing tan, beautiful people holding up a camera, Sprite this high, and pouring it into their mouths by a waterfall as everybody has big smiles on their faces and they're jumping up and down in the water. They understand through market research that that will influence me to buy a Sprite rather than a 7-Up. Sometimes even if the Sprite costs a shekel more. And you say, come on, I'm an intelligent human being. You got to be kidding. But they're intelligent human beings too, and they don't spend millions of dollars for nothing. It works. It does things. A shopping mall will enable a person to walk in and spend all day in the mall with no restrictions. It's an amazing thing. People can come there doing mall walking, right? In the winter where it's cold outside and cold climates, people want to do their aerobics, come in their sweatsuits. They bring some clothes to change in. There's a path in the mall, and you see them walking through the mall like this. There's no guard that stops you at the door of the mall saying, excuse me, miss, are you planning to buy things in here today? No. Because they know, and they're psychologists who are specialists in mall design, that even if you're not planning on buying anything, even if you have no cash in your pocket, but you do have a credit card, right, that somehow with the music and the lights and the displays and different things, you walk out with all those little designer bags in your hands. They're willing to bank on it. It happens because a person is passive. Because they don't have decisions. I was once giving, I don't do it often, sometimes I give these little mini tours in Yerushalayim of the places that I like. So I was giving a tour and I started off by the Eitz Chaim Yeshiva by the Shuk. Right? The Shuk, and right nearby is a big building, says Yeshiva Eitz Chaim. It has very interesting stories. And that's where the famous Tzaddik Rav Aryeh Levine was, the Mashgiach in the Yeshiva. And I was telling the guys I was with about Rav Aryeh Levine, and I noticed this old guy kind of hanging around bias, and I saw he wanted to say something. So I said, hello. He says, hello. He says, you should know, I know Rav Aryeh. He visited me when I was in prison twice. He said, once the British put me in prison, once the Jews put me in prison. And Rav Aryeh came to visit me. I said, oh, that's nice. I said, do you have anything to tell us about your interaction with Rav Aryeh? He said, I'll tell you something interesting. He said, I had a strong connection with Rav Aryeh. He said, and I had a relative in America who was a famous psychologist and specialized in graphology. Right, graphology, the reading of handwriting or little trees people make to tell you about the character. He said, I had a letter from Rav Aryeh and I sent it to this person. He spent a long time on it and then he wrote me back. He said, you should know that this person is governed entirely by his conscious and not by his subconscious. Everything he does, he decides to do. That's a pillar. That's what we're talking about in its highest sense. And Rav Aryeh's decisions to do were based with the Aleph of Torah. It's a very different way of life, being active in that way, having an Aleph before your base. But it ends up with a life where instead of at the end of the day looking back saying, what did I do and why did I do it, and have no idea, you're able to look back at a day where the base expressed the Aleph and brought Torah into the world. That's what each of us are able to do in every facet of our lives in Olam Hazeh. In our business dealings, in our education, in our physical dealings, in all the different things that we're doing, we're able to do that. That's the bracha of Bereshis. And it's for this that the world was created. Bereshis bishvil Reshis. For setting up your life with those priorities, that's what it's there. As you guys return to America, if and when you do, or whatever exciting countries you came from, you'll start to see that sometimes the dividing lines of communities can be drawn along that line. Is it a community where Torah is the Aleph and everything else is the base? Or is it a community where even though there is much Torah happening and being done, the Torah is somehow the base to other Alephs that are there? That's the food for thought for tonight. Don't let it keep you up too much because the Aleph says you've got to get good sleep to be your base the next day. Have a wonderful day, everybody. Next week, Shus and Goyim.
Thank you.
Yep. The Medrash is from Bereshis Rabba, Parsha Aleph, and I think it's Os Yud. The Sfasemis is, one second. I hate it when my page unfolds after I fold it on.
Riza, can we just stop your recording?